All right, so the Major League Baseball trade deadline's coming up. The Nationals have had an abysmal season. Davey Martinez fired. Mike Rizzo fired. Team hasn't exactly taken off since their, I want to say, 22 games under 500. You can check that. But they're just having a terrible year. So the trade deadline's coming up. And once again, everybody's kind of saying, well, they're going to be sellers. They're sellers all the time. Now,
definitely sellers.
DeBartolo said that they would maybe be different, but we're going to see. Here's the question, and I put this up as our Junkies poll of the day, brought to you by Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka and Surfside Lemonade and Vodka. They're the perfect addition to any gathering. Each can only 100 calories with zero carbonation for easy sipping. You can find Surfside at your local bars and in convenient variety 8-packs at your local liquor stores. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. Should they trade Mackenzie Gore? Their frontline pitcher, his record's not great because he's on the Nationals. His ERA right now, 3.52. He's got 144 strikeouts on the year. That is seventh in the National League.
And only 117 innings.
Yeah.
And his whip is a 1.27. That's 41st. But we've seen at times he's been really good. Month of May, he was really good. Should they trade him?
I'm starting to come around on it. Let's just do it. I mean, they're not as close as I thought they were a couple months ago when they were like hovering around 500 before they kind of fired everybody. I thought, okay, I see what they're building towards. Now it just feels like they're really far away. Let's just do it. Just move them.
Yeah, if you're going to get
him, look, if you know,
I'm actually pro trading.
If you know you're not going to get keep him after 27, so 2028 is his free agent year. If you know for a fact there's no chance you're going to give Scott Boras a huge deal with his clients, Mackenzie Gore, then yes.
And you know their propensity.
Now, you're probably not going to get back equal value.
True.
You're just not.
But you get something back.
I'd rather something back than nothing.
Well, you're just going to get a lot more now than you will next year. And I just think they're further away than I had hoped. So I think I would trade
unless
them.
There's somehow they're going to spend some money in the offseason, add a couple of nice free agents, and there'll be a better roster next year. And then you would need a legit number one pitcher. Now, Odds are that's not going to happen because we know how the Lerners are. The Lerner family, anyway.
I mean,
but if you know for a fact you're not going to keep them in 2 more years, well, yeah.
When you say spend more money, how much money are we talking about? Because we know that the current payroll of guys that are currently on the
double
roster
the payroll.
is right around $60 million.
All right, $120 million is not a lot of money for
it's
a payroll.
It's not. Yeah. But, like, do you expect them to double their payroll?
No, but that's what I'm saying. We don't know what's going through Lerner's head. If Lerner's saying, you know what, I'm going to go out and get two or three nice free agents next year. DeBartolo is going to be our GM. Who knows who the manager is going to be. But I'm tired of finishing last and having a payroll in the bottom five. But I would agree. It's probably not going to happen.
I just don't think those conversations are happening.
You're probably right. And if it's not happening, trade them.
Right.
So are you going to trade C.J. Abrams when his deal's up?
No.
Are you going to trade James Wood if you still own the team in four years?
Possibly, yes.
I'm not trading any of those
guys.
All
of these things are possible.
I'm not trading Mackenzie Gore.
And I would say probable. They're probable.
If Lerner still owns the team in 4 years, it's going to be a disastrous four-year run.
If you want to chime in, 1-800-636-1067. Do you think they should trade Mackenzie Gore? ESPN put out a list of the most likely trade candidates heading into the Major League Baseball trade deadline. He's number three. 1-800-636-1067. I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name, if it's DeBartolo or DeBartolo. I'm going to go with DeBartolo now. Here's what he said when he took over. He said, I'm looking to keep the young core group of our best players together. Certainly with my job, if someone calls, you always have to listen to what they have to say. But trading away a really high-quality young player is not something I'm looking to do right now. I hope he's a man of his word. Because at some point, you got to keep your guys. Mm. Or it's just going to be a never-ending cycle. EB's liking them to the Pirates. I agree. It'll be a never-ending cycle of constantly developing players, and then after a couple of years, trading them away, and it's starting over.
Well, he probably...
It's a constant start over.
He says he's listening. He's probably not liking what he's hearing from other teams.
Right, he doesn't like the returns
because
he's hearing.
Because a lot of these teams, unless they're really, really loaded in their farm system, they don't want to give up their top prospects, even for a pitcher like Gore. They want to try and get something for nothing. So maybe he's listening, but he's not liking what he's hearing. That's why he's saying, we want to keep our young guys together.
All right, so you're GM, you trade him. I'm GM, I would not trade him. Cakes?
Pro trade.
You're trading him, Jason?
I mean, I got to know what I'm getting back. Am I getting a great haul?
Yeah, the trade has to be.
I mean, I got to know what I'm getting back before I trade him.
I can't get fleeced on the trade, but I would be pro trading.
They traded Rosario. I'm Ed Rosario to the Yankees. Now, Rosario's not on the level of Gore, okay? They got an 18-year-old and another kid who apparently can't throw strikes.
That's a problem. That's
so they got average to below average prospects. Now, it's Rosario, okay? I get it. You're not going to get top prospects for him. He's going to platoon at third base with Ryan McMahon probably. But Mackenzie Gore should get something, especially with 2 years left on his deal. If you're going to give me a nice haul and I'm going to get guys, and these guys study all the prospects. If you're going to give me something nice, sure. Because I know for a fact Scott Boris isn't going to resign here in 2 years.
I don't know that for a fact.
He ain't.
Well,
come
at
on.
A minimum, he's going to go test the market.
He ain't
that
here.
Much you do know.
At some point, don't you have to keep your best players? Yeah, does Johnny Cakesaville as GM keep your best players?
But sometimes it's out of your control.
I'm just wondering, when do you keep your best players?
If I have ownership that comes to me and tells me we're only spending $80 million on the roster, I'm always going to be churning the roster.
Here's what they might start spending. So Scherzer's $15 million a year goes through 2028. Okay, Strauss $35 million goes through 2026. So in all likelihood, they're not going to spend much money the next year or two. Okay, because that's $40 million next year for guys that aren't even here, right? Can you imagine them spending, you know, on top of that right now while they're losing? I doubt it.
No.
My guess is on some level they're waiting for that money to go away before they.
If you were going to
strongly consider. Repaying these new guys and adding.
Yeah, you might be right. If you
years away.
If you wanted to keep Mackenzie Gore, keep your young core, well, you'd have to sign him now to a deal he can't pass up. And they're not going to go for that.
He's not going to do that. I just don't think it's going to work on the timeline.
I'm tired of people crying poverty for this franchise and the ownership. It's getting tiresome at this point.
Yeah.
Like, for years, this is billed as these are the richest owners in all of baseball, but they're treating this team like it's a convenience store, a rundown convenience store on the corner. Like, at some point, you have to either spend money on your investment, or you have to sell your investment to somebody that will spend money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's infighting between the family members as far as trying to sell the team, and they can't come up with a number that satisfies everybody. Just like it's feel like we're on a hamster wheel here with
third worst record in baseball right now.
Put it this way, if they trade Gore, I won't be distraught because it makes
you don't have the emotional attachment.
Well, also in the timeline of like when they could potentially start adding like in really, if they trade and they move on from Wood, that's going to be really bad. That's going to be really bad.
Yeah, I mean, that would be four years down the road.
Yeah, but it would have to be maybe a year or two before that if you want to get any haul. Like, if they trade Wood because they're just not going to get anything in return, they don't see a future, that's when you just give up hope. There's no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, can kind of make sense of it.
They put the percentage of the trade happening before Thursday at 10%, and maybe that's because of DeBartolo's comments that he wants to keep his core guys together. Who knows? It's not 90% like some of these other guys. But if he was traded, Nats fans will just say to themselves, well, that's typical. We're trading away our young studs again.
Well, I'm okay with them trading Gore, actually, because, I don't think they're going
to. It's hard to come up with legit number one pitchers.
No, they're not going to get that in return.
I mean.
But maybe they can get two or three pretty
decent. But I'm saying for
guys.
Next year. So if you don't have Gore next year. All right, you got to go out. You're not going to go out and get a number one pitcher.
We have JoJo Gray coming back.
Yeah, but Gore's better than him. And he's coming off injury. There'd be a lot of question marks.
If I were Gore, I would be renting, not buying here in the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
I would have a rental. I'd have a nice rental, but I would be renting.
Yeah,
would not be buying. I would not be putting down stakes here.
All right, 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. I'm just wondering if the Lerners recognize where they stand sort of as far as like fan perception of them right now.
Oh, they have to know.
Do they realize
their heads are just completely buried in the sand? They have to know.
They're sort of They're sort of enemy number one right now.
Yeah, they've replaced Dan Snyder.
Unless they live in the most insulated world that you could live in, they have to know that fan frustration is boiling over.
When have it comes there been to that. Any official protests yet?
Official protests? Not that I know of.
Honestly, I wonder if something like
fans
that might be
picketing outside of the stadium.
Yeah,
like,
type
of protest. Not that I know of.
Something like that.
I
force
don't...
like sell the team. We have, how many times have we had Dan sell that. The team T-shirts or sell the team chants?
Countless times.
I mean, it might be at that point now.
Maybe the fans just don't care.
I think that's what's about to happen. Like, I think apathy is setting in with the fan base.
They don't want to waste their time.
Which is the worst thing that can happen to your fan base, is apathy. At least if there were protests and movements, like, then there's still passion about the team.
I think there's there's a passionate minority. There's 10 or 20,000 people that are still, like, really upset.
It's a number that just is dwindling.
Yeah.
Just what's crazy is their attendance figures have actually gone up this year.
Right.
Slightly, but up. They're right around 25,000, which is 21st in the league.
I recommend some sell the team T-shirts, some sell the team protests.
Okay.
So I think one of the big problems is...
You won't lead the protests.
I'm not going to lead anything, but I'm just saying.
Get out there with your picket sign.
One of the big problems is, you know, and we tried talking to a couple people who are more familiar with the ownership, is nobody has a great sense of who's running the team. There's these other names that we're not even familiar with. Like, we like to say Learners, but there's...
I thought Mark was kind of the front of it.
I think he's the front of it.
Yeah.
But there are other people who are involved. Like, I don't know if they were brother-in-law whatever it is.
There were other people, the chief financial officer and all the others included. I know. The names you didn't even know of.
Exactly.
Let's go to Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, what's up?
Good morning, Junks.
Hey, Gary.
Thanks for taking my call. I think that with the firing of Rizzo, the fire of Davey, I think that this franchise is doing a complete reset. And I think that trading Gore is probably the best thing because, again, I don't think he's going to stay. I agree. I don't think he's going to be here in a couple years. And you might as well try to get something for him now. I think that if they trade Cook, I think that's where needs to be a groundswell of support.
You mean Wood?
You mean James Wood?
Wood. I'm sorry, yeah, Wood. Yeah. They need to get. There needs to be a groundswell of support in the league, like it was sort of with Snyder, to move on from the Learners. Okay. Mm. I mean, I just think that the one thing that I think that they have on their side from a fan standpoint, which kind of distinguishes them a little bit from Snyder, is that there's a recent World Series, a fairly recent World Series.
And he doesn't have the toxic workplace and sexual harassment and all those things.
Exactly. But I'm seeing them becoming like, you remember when the Florida Marlins won the World Series several years ago? And then that franchise just tanked after that. I mean, they were irrelevant for decades after that. That's sort of what I'm kind of sniffing here. Potentially with the Nationals, if the Learners.
Pretty depressing, but it's hard to argue with that so far. Pretty depressing. Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah.
Hey, bank local, cheer local, and business every day is game day. Business is always moving up or down, but never still. That's why the Main Street Bank team treats every day like game day. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank, proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender.
Trade deadline in 3 hours at 6 o'clock. Should the Nationals trade Mackenzie Gore? I feel like I'm going to irritate some people today because I now am going to go hard in the paint here. I think they need to trade Mackenzie Gore.
Need to?
Need to. I think they should trade Mackenzie Gore, and it would be a misstep not to. Now, my first order of business here is to just provide a caveat, which is to say I love Mackenzie Gore. I was in on Mackenzie Gore before it was cool. Okay, this is a former number 3 overall pick with the Padres. Was one of my favorite young pitchers in baseball. We had him on the show. People might forget this. The day the Nats traded for him in the Juan Soto deal, he actually called into our show because I had a little relationship with him from doing my prospect show in the past. And I think he is a stud. When he pitches at home, I go to those games. I am a huge believer. I think there's a potential that he turns into a legitimate ace. You know, if there's 20 of those in baseball, he could be one of those top 20 pitchers in the sport. I think on a first division World Series caliber team right now, he's probably more of a number two starter. But from the left side to throw 97, to have the secondary stuff that he has, there's a reason he's an all-star. He's gotten better every single year. I love the player. I believe in the player. I think whoever trades for him, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Tigers, whoever it would be, is doing the correct thing. By the way, if I needed an arm, I would 100% trade for Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah.
I'm getting 3 postseason runs out of him. I'm getting 2.5 years out of him. I believe in the player. To be redundant here, let me say it one more time. Mackenzie Gore guy. He is advised by Scott Boras, and he will be leaving in free agency after 2+ seasons from now. He is not a guy, even if he wasn't advised by Boras, that I think is looking to sign a long-term extension here. He's looking to get to market. And because of that, you owe it to yourself when you're not close enough to be a World Series contender during his next 2+ seasons. This year's a lost cause. Even if you have a big offseason next year, you're trying to get over 500. At best, that means in 2027, likely a work stoppage season anywhere where you're going to miss some of Mackenzie Gore's final year as it is. You have one chance to make the playoffs and go on a run with Gore before he would leave via free agency at the end of that season. If my calculations are all correct, and I think they are, this is a no-brainer. You flip him now, you get a really quality return of 3 or 4 players, including 2 high-end prospects, and you add legitimate value to your system, including a couple close to the big leagues, high-end minor league talents for Gore right now, going into a season next year, with or without him, where you're not going to make the playoffs. I think we're in no-brainer territory here. And I know it's going to be painful for the fan base. I know people are tired of players getting traded that are really good. One of your 2 all-stars this year getting flipped again. I get that. But the job of the front office, Mike DiBartolo and company, is to do what's best for the team in the long term to make them a World Series champion again as soon as possible. And I think moving Gore gives them a better chance to be that type of team in 3 years than keeping him.
If it was realistic that this ownership group would all of a sudden look in the mirror and go, oh my God, it's our fault. It's us. We'll change immediately. Then maybe, forget about the work stoppage coming for a second, you might have 2 years of being really competitive. And if they were to or would have spent money this past offseason, or they're going to now the offseason of 25 before the 26 and 27 seasons, they'll do what's necessary throughout the organization. If you really believe that, then maybe there's a case where you go, our window, and I put that in quotes, is opening up starting next year. I'd rather have 2 years of Mackenzie Gore leading me through that window, maybe get into a playoff series one time. Now, back here in the real world, where that's not happening, that's not possible, and that's not prudent, you must act accordingly. To act accordingly is to say, we're not going to be good enough to warrant keeping a guy who will leave here at the end of his contract time. That if you accept all those things as fact, then you get the most value you can, and that's right now this minute.
I'm going to give some names kind of to what you're talking about. If the ownership group internally right now thought, we're about to have a huge offseason. We're about to spend like crazy. And they're going to go get Kyle Tucker, the best outfielder and bat on the market, and give him $300 million. And they're going to pay Dylan Cease to come in here to be a co-number two or whatever with Mackenzie Gore and to be the fellow frontliner, let's just say. Or maybe even more exciting for me, like Michael King would come in here and be Gore's number two to bolster the rotation. And they're going to bring in Josh Naylor to play first base because they'll flip Nathaniel Lowe before 6 o'clock, let's say. And then they're going to fix their bullpen. Just an aggressive, legitimate Dodgers, Phillies, Mets-like offseason. Then keep Mackenzie Gore because you're trying to win next season. But that's not the world we're living in. That is not the reality. They live in a reality where they don't keep or pay their veterans that are Boras advised before they hit the market, and it's not completely their fault. Everyone wants to scream at the learners, you got to pay Gore, you got to pay James Wood. They can't. They're not allowed to by way of the agent saying, we're going to market. It takes 2 to tango. Now, they might not anyway. That is a whole nother can of worms, okay? But let's say that they were Steve Cohen. They couldn't get these guys under contract right now. It just wouldn't happen. Doesn't matter what the checkbook, the check that they're signing looks like. But if that was the offseason plan, I could get behind keeping Gore. because you're going to be an 85-win team maybe next year, and having Gore on that 85-win team gives you a better chance to be a wild card team, and who knows what happens when you get in, see 2019. But that's not the reality. So it's 2 years left. Next year, you're almost certainly not making the wild card conversation. You're just trying to get back to 500. 2 seasons from now, in a perfect world with a couple of good drafts and a couple of good off seasons, spending a little bit of money, because it's not going to be a lot of money, but a reasonable amount of money, still a spike in what you're spending. Now, 2 seasons from now, after the work stoppage, hopefully a short one, you can compete. But you're down the stretch with Gore as a free agent, and then he walks. They've done a nice job, Danny, trading things that are not bolted down so far for decent returns of minor leaguers. Ahmed Rosario, Andrew Chafin, Luis Garcia, the pitcher, Michael Soroka, Kyle Finnegan, all pending free agents. They have brought back minor leaguers, arms, Clayton Beter, lefty Jake Eater, Josh Randall, RJ Sales, infielders, Sam Brown, Ronnie Cruz, outfielders, Braum Martinez, and Christian Franklin. 8 players coming back to add to the minor league system for the 5 rentals that they have traded. That's smart, good business. Not knocking them, but they haven't brought anything back of note.
Right.
There's a really good chance that not one of the players that they brought back in any of these deals ends up being a super impactful major leaguer on a Nats team that's contending in a couple of years. It doesn't mean they weren't good deals. It just means you're not getting blue chippers back when you trade the ghost of Kyle Finnegan or 36-year-old rental Andrew Chafin, who looks like Ricky Bobby's cousin. Eastbound and down. What's that guy's name? Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers.
You're just not getting much back for those guys. There's one way to get a good return here, and it's Mackenzie Gore. That's the return you're going to get before 6 o'clock.
And we'll always have fans in our mentions at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, who just can't handle that. And I get it, because your tickets are already paid. It's not like the Nats are going to give you, you know, a discount on your Shake Shack when you go in there when it's no longer Gore pitching and it's some 4A Freddy. But what's the point of all this? Right? The point of a baseball decision is, let's make the best one for the chance to do, as you said, try to be really, really good again and to open up the window for us to be really highly competitive for multiple seasons at a time. Not one weird flare up like the football team would do when they would win 3 games in a row, 5 games in a row, 4 games in a row, go right back to being 6-10 again. That's not the point. The point is to have a core of young players, supplement with some veterans, not to just get to 500 and pat ourselves on the back, but to be really good. To go through what we frankly just did that culminated in a World Series in 2019, which is a long time ago now, but you're talking about an average of 90, 91, 92 wins per season where, yeah, sometimes it goes bad and everybody's mad at each other, you win 83. Sometimes it goes great, you win 98. That's the range. That's where you are trying to get to. This is the path to do it. I'm sorry it sucks right now. I got news. It sucks right now. It already does. We got that covered, right? When you go to the ballpark, especially if it's a day game, you're going to catch an L. I don't care who's pitching. They're halfway on the bus, dude. They pack their gear before the game starts. They're 13-2,000 during day games. They play games at home sometimes during the day. It's already so bad. It will get worse without Mackenzie Gore in the short term. But again,
if Gore
what's the
today
point?
Wanted to sign a 6-year deal at, I'm just making a number up top of my head, but at $180 million for $30 million a year, I would do it. I'm not trying to trade anyone that has value. I'm not trading C.J. Abrams, who has 3 years of control left after this season, because I believe there's a real chance that I could make the playoffs a couple times in those 3 years if they actually started spending. I certainly would have a chance 3 years from now in 2028 to have Abrams be a part, you know, an impact piece, but he's not a Boris guy. You might actually be able to get a contract done with C.J. Abrams. And by the way, Grant the Bartolo over here, running the shop, I am talking with C.J. Abrams right now, this moment, about an extension. I don't care if he's my shortstop long-term, or if I have to move him to second, or if he's playing center field at some point. None of that matters to me. He is a major league caliber offensive and base-running threat who deserves to be here and paid handsomely for a long time to come. And because he's one of the rare non-Boris guys, like Trey Turner, that you've had around here that maybe, just maybe, you could get a deal done with, I would be doing everything in my power to do that. But we live in a world right now as fans, you said it stinks, that isn't fun. I mean, did you see the details on when they traded Kyle Finnegan that came out? Finnegan's 1-year deal for $6 million was deferred over basically a 3-year span, 25, 26, and 27. A 1-year deal for $6 million for a major league reliever, who, by the way, was scheduled to make more than that, but they waived him and risked not having him at all on a bad bullpen so that they could save a couple million dollars. But then they deferred that over 3 years. I mean, that is wild work, bro, that you're going to sign a guy for $6 million on a 1-year deal and defer it over $2 million at a time for 3 years. That is almost as embarrassing as, like, when you're down on your luck and you go into that grocery store and you're paying with the pennies and it's like, I got 67 cents, and you're, like, looking around. Like, this is the ownership version of that.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? But this is where we are. I think they got to make the move today. I don't think they're going to, for the record. Trade deadline is 2 hours and, you know, 45 minutes away. I don't think ownership would sign off on a Gore deal. My guess is they could get a good offer. I don't know if they'll get a great offer, the one they want. You know, if you're holding out with you're trading them to the Tigers, you're asking for Kevin McGonigal, the best hitter in the minor leagues. They're probably not giving him to you. If they could get him, let's all just take our clothes off. But let's say you're holding out for two of their top five prospects, and Detroit's going, no, we can't do that. All right, then you could hang on to him. That's fine. Call the Cubs, call the Yankees, what have you. Maybe they don't get the perfect offer. They want 100 cents on the dollar or 110 cents on the dollar. That could be the reason they don't make the trade. But I think even if they get the right offer, I'm just not sold. You go to ownership right now that you can get everyone on the same page to say yes, number one. And number two, that they would risk whatever the rest of this season looks like without him. You've already lost Soroka from your rotation.
Yep.
They've traded three relievers from their bullpen, from a terrible bullpen.
Yeah.
Who is even filling out this big league roster for the rest of the year? They've got to add dudes to their 40-man. Maybe a couple of these 22-year-old pitchers you brought over who have been in, like, single A and double A get called up. I'm guessing up. Clayton Beter gets into the big league sooner rather than later. We saw Zach Brixey was elevated to the majors yesterday, who's really struggled. I mean, it's going to be a long rest of the way.
That's my point, with or without Mackenzie Gore. But I'm with you. I don't think it happens. I think it's a PR decision. Now, I'm not talking about, like, our friend Kyle Brostowitz and the guys that, like, you know, run Nats PR. But I think it's from an ownership level where they're going, we're taking too much heat as it is. We can't do it. We can't risk 500 less people coming to games when it's really, really bad in August and September. We can't. And so I think they'll put the kibosh or put the kibosh on any move that gets made where baseball people will have something set and they'll be told no because of whatever optic.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Trade deadline lurking for baseball, and the Nats have made their first move.
All right.
This has been widely reported. I saw from Jeff Passan first. I'm reading from Mark Zuckerman. Andrew Chafin and Luis Garcia are both headed to the Angels. In return, they're getting minor leaguers Sam Brown, a first baseman, and Jake Etter, who's a left-handed pitcher. Those guys are in the minors. This is what's going to happen, right? I don't think we got much of a surprise. But I'm reading this from Andrew Golden. You got to like this. The Nats got 10 appearances out of Luis Garcia, who they claimed off waivers, and 26 appearances out of Chafin. They got him on a minor league deal, and they turned those expiring contracts into a controllable pitcher and a first baseman. Not a bad return. You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see plenty of these.
That's the approach you got to take with this team.
Right.
Wait and see.
Right. I am excited. I'm going to the Nats game Sunday. Shout out to Bennett. I'm fired up to go. And that dude Mizorowski is pitching for the Brewers. Mm. So get to see a young fireballer, which should be pretty cool.
All right.
Excited about that.
I may be there Sunday. I just thought about it now.
Yeah, make it happen. Make it happen, Captain.
Guy hit me a thing today. Said something might come into the game.
There you go.
That's the third, right?
I think so.
That's the Ring of Fame, make the Wall of Fame or Hall of Fame stuff.
Oh, is that where they're honoring the 91 Skins? Yeah. You should definitely go. You should be down there on the field. Who will they have there?
I know Charles is supposed
Sunday
to go.
Sunday is the third.
A few other people. I know Charles had sent it out, so it was a lot of guys he had connected with.
That'd be awesome, man. Hopefully a lot of folks are there and enjoying it. It looks like latest update I've seen on this RFK hearing, Mayor Bowser just told the D.C. Council there are plans for a new fire station as part of the RFK development. I know there had been a lot of talk about getting a new fire station over there.
I would think you want a fire station if you're putting all that new stuff over there. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure. We're pro fire stations on this program.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to mention, if you go on Instagram, there's a account called Member for a Day. Yeah. And Member for a Day gets hookups at really, really great golf courses across the country, private courses. And for charitable donations, you can go play these private courses. And so there are two spots available. They don't have us playing together. We're playing separate, right?
Yeah.
So if you'd like to play Woodmont Country Club, which is a hell of a golf track up there in Rockville, where they have the U.S. Open qualifier every year. If you'd like to play Woodmont with either Brian or myself, check out Member for a Day. It's for a great cause. Benefits Crohn's and colitis, really awful diseases that strike people, stomach cancer, basically, right? And is that the right way of saying it? So check out Member for a Day for that. I shared it. I'm guessing B shared it. Yeah. What do you think is going on in Terry McLaurin's head right now? First off day, he reported he's been signing autographs. Like, is his head spinning? Like, is he locked in for this?
Locked in for the
holdout? Like, how long it's going to go?
I don't have a clue, man. I think you should have one mind, and then when Sutton's deal is signed, I think you have to readjust. And because if you see that's how the league is going, you got to understand. But I also feel that this team should also look at him a little bit and say, you know what? Dude has been around and been that bright spot for a while. And pay a little more. I'm not saying drastic more, but a little more.
It's got to weigh on you, though, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. But that's what I said yesterday, and I'll say it over and over again. That player better realize he is the final say, not the agent.
Right. At some point, the agent might want to have some sort of record-breaking deal that, be honest, might help him sign other clients. But, like, at some point, maybe Terry's like, dude, get the best and final and let's get this done. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and I don't know this, we can even ask it about Cosme. When they go to New England next week, would Pup guys travel for that joint practice and then the preseason game?
Do what?
Players on the pup list. Let's just talk Cosme specifically. Do you think he'll travel next week?
I don't think so.
So then we wouldn't think Terry would travel next week, right?
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't either. Somebody yesterday at practice, I think, asked me, like, oh, you haven't been betting much on the show. And you're not incorrect. One, the training camp shows are just so busy and chaotic that it's hard, but it's also – it's just baseball. I guess you could be betting WNBA. There is stuff to be betting. We'll get back at it next week and kind of lock that in. I did want to ask the room something. I reported earlier, per sources, that Linnell Willingham ate my old salad.
Uh-huh.
And it was in one of these nice containers that my wife yells at me about.
Did he throw it away?
I saw him after he had eaten it, and I said, hey, don't forget to give me that container. We are off the air in 2 minutes for Nats baseball. Linnell has not given me the container yet. Brian, do you think he's going to give me that container?
Probably
before
not.
Landfield, do you think he's going to remember to give me that container?
You need to go get it.
Jeffrey?
You're the one got to do it.
I actually think he is because he washed it out and he said, yo, can you take this to JP? I said, no, he gave it to you. You ate out of it.
You couldn't have just brought it for me so I actually get it?
I think he's going to give it to you.
I'll be out the door in 3 minutes.
And you're going to get in trouble when you get home, so you better go get that damn thing.
Hopefully.
That hopefully didn't sound like you got that much faith. Jeff looks like a farmer in his hat right now. We need to get Jeff some overalls.
I have some. Overalls waiters.
And a tank top. Thank you to everybody that listened to the program today. Thank you to Mark Zuckerman for joining us. Zuck's about to be busy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Neil Greenberg for joining us, and thank you to John Keim for joining us. We're back in Ashburn tomorrow. If you see us, say what's up. If you see a guy that looks like Eddie George, just yell, Eddie George! Nats baseball coming your
Who's
way next.
Guy?
Mackenzie Gore on the bump. Made it this far. Linnell owes you a Tupperware container.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah,
go
ahead. Go ahead.
I've been thinking, hold on, I'm only quiet because I was trying to think of my top five list of things that are going right for the Nats.
No, it's hard.
And my silence is that I couldn't come up with even one.
Yeah. What about James Wood?
So disappointing.
Yeah.
How could, I mean, listen, you got to love, he was in the home run derby. That was cool. I wouldn't mind having a number one starter named Gore. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind finding a different manager than Dave Martinez, as much as I loved him. It was time. That's fine. Maybe a better than the interim and find someone who can come in. Maybe the team will get sold. There's that. But here's the thing. This all goes back, and I hate to say it, but it's true. It all goes back to COVID. The Nationals are the last remaining team that are suffering from COVID fatigue because they never got the World Series bump that they so desperately deserved and needed. And after they won the World Series, obviously they couldn't take advantage of it. And believe me, that kind of stuff doesn't just last a month. It lasts years. And I hope we're at the tail end of it. But that, I think, explains a lot of what's going on with the Nats.
Well, and also, I mean, we've talked to some people who kind of know what's going on in ownership, and there's a ton of owners, okay? Mark Lerner's not the 100% owner. There's a bunch of people. Some of them want to sell the team. Some of them don't, okay? It's got to kind of be unanimous. They all have to vote on it. And I'm not sure if Mark Lerner is one of those guys who wants to sell, or maybe he doesn't want to sell. I'm not sure. But they're not spending any money. Their payroll is low. That's why this Mackenzie Gore trade deadline thing is interesting, because, you know, he's a Boris guy. He's not going to re-sign here. He's going to go to free agency after two more years, probably pitch really well for a contender if he gets traded, and get a big deal. And they're not going to sign him to a big deal. So does it make sense for the Nats to trade Mackenzie Gore, even though everything I read say it's a long shot? Maybe that's just kind of based on what they would get coming back. But does it make sense to trade Mackenzie Gore?
Well, you say that, but the reputation of Ted Lerner, who was a mentor of mine, and I miss him very much as the patriarch of the team, and we'll get back to sort of what happened after he passed away. But it's not like Ted Lerner and the Nats didn't do business with Scott Boras at all. They were very much known as a Scott Boras, you know, sidekick, in that Scott would use the Nationals to get some deals done that would make him look good, and the Nationals were willing to do them. And so I wouldn't say that Boras is the reason. It's the fact that the team is for sale, and you've got to think about who the new owners are and what they are going to want in terms of players or obligations. And in terms of what you need to sell the team, just keep in mind when Ted died, yes, the control person is Mark. However, the team is owned by several of the children and in-laws of Ted.
Yep.
And yes, it's a lot like the Buss family. Do you know how the Lakers got sold? Is that Mark Walters said, I know you all can't agree on whether you want to sell, but how does $10 billion sound? Well, all of a sudden, all the kids said, well, that sounds too good to pass up, so we're going to sell. That's one type. The second type is when Ursay dies owning the Colts, and he gets the kids together and says, hey, I'm going to die, and how do we feel about the three of you in these three positions, and you continue owning the team? Are you all in? Well, that conversation happened, and that's what's happening with the Colts. It didn't happen with the Nats. There was no resolution. Things were always so up in the air, whether it's Masson and the big fights they were having with Angelos and the Orioles and MLB, whether it was which kids wanted to cash out and which kids didn't, because some loved baseball, some didn't. There was just never any unanimity of purpose. And that tends to then leak down to the team. And I think what you're seeing now is the team is for sale no matter what Mark says. If the price is right and the bid is hit, meaning all the kids agree, the team will get sold. And when you know you're selling your team, it impacts how much money you're willing to lose operationally and how much you're willing to have on the books going forward. So it does impact what you do in the free agent market. So all of this is really quite understood to me why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
All right. So do you think that they're going to sell or trade Gore?
I actually do not, because if you are an incoming owner, I believe that Gore adds value to your team.
Okay.
But remember, when a buyer comes in, very rarely, you know, when we sold the Marlins to Derek Jeter, he didn't do a player-by-player analysis. He knew where the payroll was going to be, knew he'd have to trade all the players and bring the payroll down, and that was part of his plan going into new ownership. Obviously, it didn't work for him, and that's how he lost his job. But you don't not buy a team because you've got a player on a long-term deal or because you've got a young player who got traded, because generally your horizon is longer. But when you're the seller of the team, you try to be as careful as you can not to give reasons to a potential buyer to offer less than what you need them to offer.
Do you think the Lerners realize that since Dan lost the Skins, now the Commanders, whatever you want to call them, they've become kind of enemy number one here for the fan base. The fan base is so frustrated, and for whatever reason, you could say the COVID hangover and never got that bounce and everything else that's happened. You know, it's six straight years of losing. They're like enemy number one in this town. They're very upset that they're not spending the money. Doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. Seems to me you kind of think they're eventually going to sell. So this regime will never spend money until the next group comes in. Do they even realize how the fans feel about them, if you had to guess?
Yeah, I think that's why they made a change at GM, because I could give you a bunch of cities where the perception is they're not spending money, but they make the playoffs, whether it's the Rays or the Orioles or the Guardians. There are low payroll teams who do make it to October. Now, if you're a low payroll team that doesn't, like the Pirates, you tend to get overly criticized. When you're a low payroll team that does, you tend to get complimented. You know, let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers and what they're accomplishing this year, and what we've seen over the years over in the AL Central with the Twins, whereas the White Sox get criticized because they don't win with a low payroll. So I think what you mean is people are upset about the losing and not upset about the payroll. I think hopefully that's what you mean, because if you were competing for a playoff spot, I think that you'd be fine with whatever the payroll was.
Well, they assume people around here, basically, I understand what you're saying. Our producer has brought up those examples before of teams that have gotten to the playoffs and done well with limited payroll. But they basically say the feeling here is if you're not going to spend money, you can't win on the whole. Maybe you could luck box a year or two, but especially when you go young.
I have a ring on my finger for having young players who were outperforming and then complimenting them with some veterans. So,
but they're
again,
not complimenting them with the veterans. Like the veterans
they're
are
not
garbage.
Spending. Like I think their total payroll for guys that are playing this year is around $60 million. A lot of their payroll is tied up in Strasburg and Max, those deferred deals.
So I would like to remind everyone how everyone felt when Strasburg was the MVP and was he going to be signed, when Scherzer was brought in, when Patrick Corbin was brought in. It's not like they weren't spending money. The problem is they were deficit spending. Yeah. And when you deficit spend and you're not the Dodgers, the rooster's going to come home to roast. And, of course, I just mixed my metaphors.
But
that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's where you are now. Eventually, if you are taking Peter to pay Paul, eventually Peter rears his ugly head, and that's where you are. So the Nationals don't look at it as though they don't have a high payroll. Only you do, because they're looking at cash out the door.
Understood.
And that's the problem with deferred money, and that's why doing business with Boris is a bad idea.
Here's the thing. It seems like, at least from afar, that the only guy locally that's interested really in buying the Nats is Ted. And Ted's not anywhere near the number that they want, right? So it doesn't sound like Ted's going to cave anytime soon. So if they have this team, let's say, for the next 3-4 years, whatever,
the disaster continues.
Can we expect them to start spending money again when the Scherzer and the Strauss deals come off the payroll?
Off the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would expect that is when. I think that the fewer deferred deals they do going forward, the better. I think that once those deals come off the book, you do get free operating income that you can put back into payroll. But I would just tell you that if you were to do a $1 bet, Mortimer, I would tell you that 4 years from now, the Learners will not own the Nationals.
Yeah.
Talking to David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, also a former Miami Marlins executive. So let's go bigger picture. And we can start with what apparently went down with Manfred and Bryce Harper, but bigger picture, is a strike looming in a couple of years?
Well, I think it's not a strike. I don't think the players will have a chance to strike because the owners are going to lock them out.
Right.
And so I think that the day the this agreement ends, December in 2026, the players will get locked out as they did a few years ago with the last CBA. The question is, more germane, are we going to miss games? Because this past round, we had a delay of the season by a week or two, and we managed to squeeze in 162 by having the World Series go deeper into November. The question is, will there be 162 or fewer than 162? And I would say, given the way that these two sides are positioning themselves, it's a problem. But I would point out that Bryce Harper getting in Rob Manfred's face, it's not Bryce Harper, it's Scott Boras. Bryce Harper is carrying the water for Scott Boras. Scott Boras coming out with a ridiculous quote yesterday that Bryce Harper's been held down by caps his whole career. It's enough to make me sick. There's not one bit of a cap that is about Bryce Harper at all. And the funny part is that the rest of the union should be fine with the cap, because the reason that the rest of the union has a problem is the minimum salary isn't high enough, that there's some human pension issues, retirement benefit issues that would accrue to the benefit of an overwhelming majority of the union. Remember, Boras's guys are nothing. They're a tiny percentage of the union, and they all voted against the last CBA, and every team rep voted in favor of it because the team reps actually represent players, whereas Boras actually represents himself.
How much resentment is there between the halves like Bryce Harper and the guys who are making 25 and 30 million a year and the vast majority of the players who are the have nots? I mean, that has to be a bone of contention between those two parties, right?
Yeah, management certainly hopes so. That's how you get deals done. That's why Rob Manfred's going around talking to players, because he doesn't want to count on the union talking properly to the players or being truthful to the players, because they're too busy answering to Boras and his group of, you know, eight guys who are at the top of the food chain. So it's all an interesting thing. And listen, you know how it goes in an argument. The minute you raise your voice and start swearing, you've lost the argument. If it's true that Bryce Harper went nose to nose, he's choosing the wrong commissioner, because Rob's not going to back down. And Rob also knows that, hey, this is fantastic, because the more emotional and angry you are, the worse you are at negotiating. And so if Boras is going to get emotional and his players are going to get irrational, that is going to mean a positive thing for the owners during the course of the negotiation. So I don't think you're seeing Rob crying his soup over what happened.
All right, so a couple of interesting things from yesterday slash last night. Suarez gets hit on the hand by a 96-mile-an-hour pitch. He was, if you looked at the deadline rankings of players who would be dealt, Suarez was at the top. How does that affect him? And then also Emmanuel Clase, the closer in Cleveland, he's done because now he's on leave until the end of August because of this gambling investigation. And I'm not sure if you saw the pitches that are in question.
I did.
He threw those balls about 53 feet, and it was hysterical. So talk about that. Those two guys who may have been dealt now are probably off the table. So who are the top two or three guys that will be dealt, in your opinion?
Well, Suarez's x-rays were negative, and the Diamondbacks are thankful, because if they're responsible at all, they will trade him by Thursday at 6 p.m. You can always do what the Yankees did with Chapman. You can trade him to the Cubs and then re-sign him as a free agent if Ken Kendrick wants Suarez back so badly. But the Diamondbacks' season's over. They are not good enough to compete for a playoff spot here in the National League in 2025. So all these free agents-to-be, you should let them all go and get whatever you can, but do it at the end so you get the best return possible. Have teams bidding against each other, and then just choose the best offer at 5:59 p.m. on Thursday. And when Suarez got hit, the gasp came from the front office of the Diamondbacks, not from any possible acquiring team. Right. Because what you do when you're trying to get a player, if the player isn't available, you go to the next player. There's always a next player, but when he's your player and you want to move him and then something happens, you're despondent, like the Guardians. Class A should have been traded, and now he can't be traded. He could end up getting suspended for life over this.
Right.
Rob Manfred has been very public saying these prop bets, man, they're not great. They just lead to problems. But the good news is the gambling companies, it's easy to get caught, especially when players are idiotic about it. But the investigation is going to happen. It's going to take time. But don't be surprised if there's a lifetime ban here.
Wow.
And Class A is a first-rate, top-rung closer, even though his year this year is not as good as last year. But last year was, you know, hard to imagine. You can't do that over a period of years unless you're Mariano Rivera. So I just view this as terrible timing for the Guardians, who also are not in the race, who would have been able to gain assets. And that's how you look at it as a team president, like, oh, man, this is a wasted opportunity. And it really is wasted forever, I think.
David, thanks so much for the time. We always appreciate it. Follow him on Twitter, at David P. Sampson. We'll talk to you again soon.
Have a great day. Thank you.
You too.
Thank you, buddy.
That's David Sampson. All right. The podcast Bye-bye. Is Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He's a former Marlins exec. Remember, you can listen to the Junks, hopefully on 106.7 The Fan. But if not, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. We'll be right back.
All right, I believe we are hours away from the MLB trade deadline, and Nats decided to make a big move. Not maybe the biggest move they can make, but
we
a big one. We kind of
figured this would come, though.
I think they'd be crazy not to, frankly. Yeah. Helping us make sense. So the Nationals have traded Kyle Finnegan to the Detroit Tigers. I almost said the Detroit Lions, if you don't think I'm in football mode.
Yeah, but that's new, that one.
Finnegan was really good last year, not the same year this year, but clearly a player that could help a contender, especially if maybe he's not working the ninth. Maybe he's working the seventh or the eighth. Toby Altizer is the official baseball insider for the B. Mitchell Finley program. Toby, take us through the Finnegan trade. What do you think?
Yeah, so they trade him to Detroit. The return, according to Andrew Golden, is they get back Josh Randall, a right-handed pitcher right now in high A, and then RJ Sales, another pitcher currently in A ball. Randall's ranked 15th, according to MLB Pipeline. RJ Sales outside the top 30. But both of these guys could help down the line, more so just organizational depth as pitchers. Randall, 17 starts this year in high A, 3.92 ERA, struck out 70 over 80 in the third inning, so solid arm there. And RJ Sales, he's got 16 games this year, 15 starts, a 2.71 ERA, so two solid arms in the low minor league, so they're not going to be here anytime soon. But anybody that's not bolted down for the future is available to be moved. And I think last year they looked at the Finnegan situation and they non-tendered him, and there was a real chance they weren't going to get him back this season. So they didn't want to make that same mistake, as he's probably not back next season. So move him for anything that you can get and get a couple of quality arms that can help you out in the low minor leagues, and maybe you can develop him and they can help you down the line.
What does that mean in terms of helping this team produce better on the field?
Well, right now, B-Mitch, yeah, right now, nothing, frankly. Right now, it's not going to help this team out in the slightest. And honestly, the way Finnegan has pitched recently, it's been a bit of a struggle for him as well. And it's so tough, I'm sure, for some of these guys getting to this point of the season, where I think a lot of them, with the expectations they had going into this year, or that they would at least be more competitive. And basically with that month of June into early July, it just kind of took them out of it. So we'll see if they can improve, but you're losing pieces. That's now three pieces out of the pen. You lost a starter in trading away Soroka, and we'll see if they make some more moves. But, yeah, I mean, this team has been pretty bad already, and it's just only going to get worse because there's not a whole lot of these pieces that are going to help out right away.
The Nats are currently 20 games under 500. In telling you how this works, the Nats are 20 games under 500. The Tigers are 20 games over 500. I know at one point they were tied for the best record in the majors, right? Like, the Tigers, what is Finnegan for them? A seventh, eighth inning piece?
Yeah, just more, you know, quality relief. Like, he's had experience as a closer here, obviously, and they're not going to use him as a closer, I wouldn't think. But you can never have too many arms in the postseason, especially with how modern baseball works, where your starters usually only go in four or five unless you have, like, a Tarek Skubal like they have. But on other days, you know, they're probably going to pull their starter when it gets to the third time through the order. So you're going to end up using four or five relievers a game in the postseason. So he can go out there and give you a quality inning. And I think the stuff isn't quite as good this season as it has been in the past. But if you can get him out there and pitching effectively, he can be a really, really good reliever. So he's not going to pitch the ninth for them, but he'll be someone that can be effective in some high leverage spots.
So the Nats make a big move. Kyle Finnegan is going to Detroit. Finnegan was, I think he was an all-star last year, right? I know he had the dope Star Wars bobblehead. A lot of people were surprised they didn't trade him last year when they had the chance. They were able to bring him back. Does this say a little something about the difference between Riz and DeBartolo that Finnegan got traded this year and not last year?
Maybe a little bit, but I would have thought that even if Rizzo were still in charge here, he would have traded him. I think they looked at how last season played out, and they looked at not trading him as a mistake, and I think they were exploring those options, but maybe they fooled themselves a little bit and thinking that they were a little more competitive than they actually were, because around the trade deadline time, they were still hovering close enough to 500 that if you had a good stretch, maybe you could get somewhere. But no, I don't think that it's a big difference, but I think you're seeing with DeBartolo what he's been able to do with basically anybody that's on a one-year contract or isn't a part of the long-term plan. He's finding ways. Like, I really liked what they got back for Soroka in that deal, and you got to be happy with what he's done so far. Now, you know, the big question is whether Gore is on the table or not. I would not trade him. I know it seems like most people have kind of flipped to the other side, and they would trade him at that deadline, but it's been crazy to see some of the returns, like the return the Padres just gave up to the A's to go get a reliever in Mason Miller and another starter in J.P. Sears, giving up the number three prospect in all of baseball to get him. You know, maybe you do have to consider moving Mackenzie Gore if that's kind of the market you're looking at. If you're shopping within the top 10 prospects in all of baseball, that's definitely something you'd have to consider.
If you're always trading pieces to find prospects, possibilities, and your possibilities don't hit consistently, how the hell do you build a team?
It's a great point, B-Mitch.
I know people like to tell me about how baseball is different and everything. But I tell you, if I'm buying season tickets, I don't want to hear that. I want to see you successful, competing, being somebody in contention. Not the person every year you're telling me, oh, we're going to be better in about 4 years, though. And we're not.
Yeah, I saw Kyle Glazer writes for, I think he does Foul Territory TV. He used to do Baseball America, really smart. He said that basically one in five prospects that's traded the deadline ever turn into significant big leaguers. And that's what makes the Juan Soto trade so crazy, is you have three guys already, and there's a chance for a fourth with Harley and Susana coming up. You hit on that, and you hit on that trade so well with Gore, Abrams, and Wood, and potentially Susana down the line, that trades like that don't happen very often. And that's what I think is so funny, is so many people talk about trading Gore and saying, well, if you get a Soto-like return, there haven't been Soto-like returns ever in the history of baseball. And there's probably never going to be another Soto-like return ever again in the history of baseball. That's just not how it works. And so for every Juan Soto deal, there's pick your bad trade where a team gets a couple of prospects and they never make the majors or they're never impactful big leaguers. And so I completely agree, B. Mitch. I mean, unfortunately, where this team is at, when it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to sign any of their own guys, like a Mackenzie Gore, then you end up getting into the spot where whenever there's 2 years, a year and a half left, you trade away all your guys, and that's what sucks so much about this. But hopefully, in the next couple of years, with developing some of these young guys, and you know, maybe you're targeting a 2027, a 2028, where Wood would still be a part of the team, but I don't think that Gore would, and if they'd have to sign Abrams at that point if it's going to be a part of the future. It's just, it's a weird spot to be in, and frankly, it's what makes this part of Nationals history so disappointing, is it felt like they were on the rise a little bit, and now they've kind of gone back down, and maybe they're a little further away than we thought, and that's already after a couple of years of really crappy baseball.
So what's your gut say about Gore? They don't do it?
I don't think they trade him. I don't think that at this deadline they'll do it. Now, I think the good part is now that they've talked about it so much, I think fans are kind of somewhat prepared. So I don't think that it happens at the deadline, but I would say it's better than 50-50 chance he gets moved in the offseason. But I just don't think that at the buzzer here with a couple hours left before the deadline, they'll do it.
So what else could happen then? Like, who? What are the other moves?
I know it's crazy because it's funny how the first couple weeks, month and a half of a season can sometimes kind of set a narrative for a guy for the year, but Josh Bell has been incredible over the last 40 to 50 games. Wouldn't be surprised if they're able to move Josh Bell. Doesn't seem like the trade market for Nathaniel Lowe is picking up, so I don't know that they'll move him. I've heard some teams are maybe talking about Alex Call. Would they move a Luis Garcia Jr.? But basically anybody that's not tied down, so basically anybody that's not Abrams, Wood, or Gore, it wouldn't be shocking to see any of those guys moved. But I think the only dudes with real value that'll probably still get moved would be Josh Bell and maybe Garcia or Call. But I think it's almost a given that Josh Bell goes somewhere, even if it's for very minimal.
All right. That's our boy Toby Altizer. Give him a follow. Appreciate at Toby underscore Altizer, T-O-B-I underscore A-L-T-I-Z-E-R. Fair to guess, once the trade deadline passes, there'll be a new Bustin' Loose podcast?
Yes, sir. There should be one being recorded tonight. We'll have it out for you tomorrow morning.
There you go. Toby joining us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Appreciate you, Toby. Take you in a pinch.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, buddy. That's our guy, Toby Altizer. Give him a follow, man. A lot of good baseball information. The kid's all over everything. Talking about Madden ratings. Maybe we circle back to Madden ratings or we do that tomorrow. Coming next, though, Tony Pauline, wired in the NFL, really good at the scouting game. Tony Pauline talking Terry McLaurin's contract. Nobody go anywhere.
Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, to talk to the Nats interim general manager Mike DeBartolo, who just put the finishing touches on his first deadline as an acting general manager after many years working under Mike Rizzo, and he's kind enough to hop on with us here to discuss what the Nats did and didn't do. Mike, thank you for the time. It's Grant and Danny. How are you?
Absolutely. Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
How different was yesterday for you? Give us an idea just in the past of what your role was and how involved you were with Mike and what that was like yesterday. Were you the only one working the phones, or was there someone in that DeBartolo role from the past that was kind of handing you the phone when something was almost done? Like, how did it actually work?
Yeah, you know, it was in some ways a lot the same because I've been heavily involved in the past and been in that room for 10 plus years. But obviously when you're making the decisions, it's a little bit of a different story. But I was working the phones, most of the time myself, and I was doing that in the past heavily as well. So, not a huge change in some of the day to day, like minute by minute. But when you're making the final call and obviously you're setting the priorities and making those final decisions, it was a little bit different and exciting, and excited about the guys we got back and the strong talent. We were able to build the farm system a little bit further and hopefully make things better for the future.
What was the theme for you guys yesterday? Just in terms of that, was it the priority to widen the depth in the farm system, to try to grab a couple guys that you think may be marquee? Just sort of give me a feel for what you went into yesterday and maybe the past week or so as you've made several moves. What was kind of the main theme there, Mike?
Yeah, the big picture goal was just to bolster, get as much talent, future talent as we could in whatever way we could. So it wasn't sort of, hey, target one guy, it was, just upside and building depth in the farm system, however we could do it, and just get the best prospects we could. So whether it was pitching, with guys like Eric Swan and Sean Paulinion from the Dodgers and Josh Randall and RJ Sales from the Tigers and the Finnegan trade. Those are arms we're really excited about. But we also got some position players, Ronnie Cruz, an infielder, young infielder in the Soroka trade from the Cubs, and Christian Franklin, and a really versatile outfielder from the Cubs. Jake Eater, a major league arm, pitching the majors in the Chafin Garcia trade. So, tried to just get value and talent wherever we could and just build out the depth a little bit further throughout the system.
Mike, another question as to how the deadline actually works, and I guess every situation could be different, but do you highlight players you really like, either based on your databases analytically? You said you used more of kind of a numbers data approach this time around, or with pro scouts that see someone and call you. I'll use Linnion is an example because he's such a talented prospect. Like, is that someone where you guys go, all right, we want this guy. Let's see if we can figure out a way to get him from the Dodgers. Or do the Dodgers call you about Call And then when you get into their system, you find some guys you like. Like, what happens first?
Yeah, it's much more, it's the latter. We've got some guys, certainly the guys that were on expiring contracts, the Soroka, Finnegan, the Rosario, and then areas where, we have a little bit more of organizational depth, and a little bit more of a logjam, like in the situation of Alex calling the outfield, where we feel like we have several talented outfielders. Teams will call us on these guys, and that's usually the way it works is, teams call and say, hey, we're interested in, Michael Soroka. We're looking, for another starter. Like, what are you guys thinking? And we'll dig into the, it's obviously a lot of work and, great job by our whole front office staff and our scouts on the ground. And, we'll dig into those organizations and kind of try to find that sort of sweet spot where, okay, this guy's a good pitcher. He's, in terms of what we're giving up, but it's on an expiring contract. Let's find, some interesting prospects that we think can really help the system and, that have performed well, that have some attributes we like,
I'd imagine you guys don't have portfolios on like every player in the minor leagues at AA. So I'm just like,
we have information on every professional player, on in every organization. And so we'll go through and, we have, performance information, we have scouting information, we have, kind of value information on kind of how we sort of press out these guys, and we'll talk through those names. Okay. Like, in this range, Ronnie Cruz, we really like, we have a good scouting report on him. He's performed well in rookie ball. He's young, he's athletic. He hits the ball really hard. He has good knowledge of the strike zone. He's athletic. He has a good arm. He can put like, these are all conversations, in more depth, obviously, and we'll kind of talk through all these guys and try to come to a consensus of who we think fits best and who we want to ask for, from the organization. And then you go back and forth with that team and try to see if you can line up on some guys. So these are guys that we highlighted and feel really good about. And, ultimately, to get this major league talent that clubs were seeking, we were able to get these guys in return.
Mike DeBartolo with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Mike, I looking at the transactions, all makes a lot of sense to me. All the hotel room guys, the guys that probably aren't going to buy here that we're renting, just here short term, the Andrew Chapmans, Luis Garcias of the world, totally makes a lot of sense to me. I would have lost a lot of money if I'd gone into yesterday saying that Josh Bell wouldn't have been traded. I was really, really surprised by that. I love Josh Bell. He's a great dude. I think he should be either run for office or be a college professor or something like that. He can do whatever he wants.
Sure.
I was pretty surprised by that. I'd love for you to walk us through that.
Yep. Yeah, look, for the guys that were on expiring deals and we were very open-minded to opportunities for them to go to a winner and chase a ring, and that's something we were very open-minded to, and ultimately nothing came together for those guys.
Would you have taken like even a lesser deal? You maybe don't want to get into specifics, but should we assume that to mean there just wasn't much of a market?
I would just say we were very open-minded to moving those guys.
All right. The one guy we haven't asked about and probably could have and should have started the conversation with is Mike DeBartolo's with us, is Mackenzie Gore. There was so much leading up to the deadline in terms of smoke on Gore. Did you actually have conversations on Gore with teams, or was that just rumors? And did any of them materialize in any kind of serious discussions?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a player as talented as Mackenzie, an all-star who's controllable for years, teams call and, it's our job to listen and evaluate every opportunity that's brought before us. So certainly, when teams call and they did, we listen and we discuss it. We discuss it throughout the organization as to kind of what makes sense for us. And ultimately, we value Mackenzie very highly. He's a great pitcher. And, we just weren't able to line up on something there and think he's a really important part of the club. And it's really not, when you look at what happened in the market, it wasn't much of an outlier relative to some other teams that had some really talented pitchers out there that were also controllable that didn't move on some other teams. And so, you know, we value McKenzie highly and think really highly of him, and just nothing came together on that.
Yeah, right at the deadline yesterday when we found out that McKenzie Gore hadn't been traded, I even think on the air, I kind of wondered, could you guys not get the deal you wanted, or maybe ownership wanted to hang on to him? And as last night went on and I looked around, it didn't seem like a lot of the starting pitchers got moved. So I guess I would just get a thought from you on the starting pitching market and maybe why it didn't materialize. But also, is that fair to say that it wasn't that ownership said we're keeping McKenzie Gore, it was just that you didn't get a deal that you thought was good enough to trade an all-star number one type starter?
Yeah, I can't speak for other teams. I mean, again, for us, you know, we had conversations organizationally. You know, I keep ownership involved and aware of all the conversations I'm having, and we had really productive conversations there, and they had good questions, and they want to win. You know, yeah, again, so ultimately nothing was brought to us that, you know, we had to be extraordinarily motivated to move a guy like McKenzie Gore, who's an all-star and just an incredibly talented pitcher. And there was nothing that compelled us to do that ultimately.
Mike, also, we haven't had a chance to speak with you since the draft. Would love kind of your thoughts about this kind of whirlwind month or so of player acquisition, you know, feeding your system there for the Nationals. Yeah. Just kind of give us your 30,000 foot view there.
Yeah, I think we've made a lot of progress and accomplished a lot in 3 to 4 weeks. I appreciate the question. I mean, when you look at how much talent we've added to the organization in the last, you know, 3+ weeks, you know, Eli Willett's the number one pick in the draft, a switch hitting shortstop with a great approach at the plate, who's a talented hitter, who's a elite defender, and you can go through the list. Ethan Petry with a, you know, big power bat, big. You know, some really talented high school arms in Miguel Semmy Jr. and Coy James and Landon Harmon, Coy James being a, you know, infielder. You know, those five guys, it's a huge amount of talent to add to the organization. And then you add in, you know, the guys we got at the deadline, several talented pitchers, some position players. So, you know, just in the last 3 weeks, I think we've added a lot of talent that's really going to benefit the Nationals over the long term, and I feel really good about that.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes we shouldn't, you know, go full, you know, Chris Farley, where we bring someone on and just tell them how awesome everything was that they did. But the draft, I was so happy with. It seemed like you guys had a plan. And look, a lot of these guys that you took earlier, teenagers, it's lottery tickets in high school. There's just no way to know with those first 5 rounds worth of players that you took if they're going to become the players you want them to be or not. But you went in with a plan, and to get Harmon and Semmy and James after you go Willits and Petry, you guys had to be elated. Was that kind of all telegraphed before it started, or how much of that is kind of figuring things out as you go?
No, it's a great question, and I appreciate the kind words too. I mean, it went exactly as how we hoped. I, you know, quite honestly, it went exactly as we had hoped. It wasn't telegraphed per se. You know, we didn't, you know, Willits was the number one guy on our board, and, you know, to be able to get him and at, you know, sign him at a number that allowed us to get several other talents that we had really circled in the draft as guys we really wanted. You know, you don't know that's, you know, possible until the draft unfolds. And it really did unfold, exactly as we would have hoped, to get, you know, so much upside, and not just, you know, the number one guy on our board, but then several other guys, you know, second, third, fourth rounds that, you know, the talent, you know, especially in some of those later rounds, and we, you know, paid those guys above slot bonuses, but the talent was way above where they were drafted, you know, in my opinion. And so we were just really ecstatic as well as to how that all played out.
Interim GM of the Nats, Mike DeBartolo. I know you got to jump. We'll let you out on this, Mike. You've had about a month here, and in a short order with the draft, And with free, and now the trade deadline, I mean, a lot was thrown on your plate as a first time acting general manager. If this was an audition and you move five guys, four of which were rentals, or six guys, five rentals and one that was controllable for 10 new players to the system, and then the draft we just talked about, I know it's not about you, but you got to feel pretty good about what you've shown as a GM here over the last month as a candidate for the job.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, it's a credit to the staff around and a whole team effort, you know, both the scouts and the front office staff, and everybody's been working incredibly hard. And, it's been very exciting and rewarding to see how motivated everybody is and how hard everybody's working and the great job everybody else is doing. So, you know, I had enough on my plate. You know, as you said, it's a whirlwind between jumping right in with the draft and deadline. So haven't even thought about, you know, the implications of any of that other than just excited about the talent we brought in for the Nats. So, but I really appreciate the kind words.
Mike, thank you for joining us, man. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Mike DiBartolo, the interim general manager with the Nationals in the wake of yesterday's trade deadline, discussing some of the moves the Nats made. They trade 6 players out. 5 were players that were leaving or weren't under contract beyond this year. They get 10 players they add to the minor league system, including 3 in their top 15 via MLB pipeline. They did okay, considering they really didn't trade much.
Right, they didn't give up a lot.
Their biggest asset was Alex Cole.
Uh-huh.
And you flood the system with more talent. I still am willing to rave about the draft. I just thought the execution of the plan was phenomenal. We'll see. They're going to go out and shop for executives and managers, but the Bartolo's acquitted himself well as data guy, which is, you know, movement a lot of people have wanted to see for a long time.
I'll tell you this real quick. Everybody I've ever spoken to where his name has come up has had glowing things to say about him.
And, he's just a worker,
in all walks.
Man.
Yeah. And all, regardless of what job you had with the Nationals or were dealing with him, they've been very impressed with that guy.
He's very well liked.
Yeah.
He is in anonymity in the shadows, just worked really hard for a long time. It's hard generally not to like people who get very little credit and just do a lot of work. And that's kind of been his role as Rizzo's right-hand man for an extended period of time.